Coolio. Coolio. Cool. All right.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting, for live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside cannot giving up a second thought about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me,
people,
you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is?
What's with your life?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I'm your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway, because you don't procrastinate. You don't put stuff off. You get it done. That's right. That's right. We get it done. That's the kind of brothers and sisters that we must be. We get things done. I want to give some love to Brother Bob Johnson for the coordination and the bringing into fruition another beautiful Juneteenth Day celebration here in the ATL. It's on the weekend. I know Juneteenth Day is this Wednesday, and we'll talk about that. I know that Milwaukee celebrates Juneteenth Day on Juneteenth Day, and I know it's going to be a great day. Hope the weather will be accommodating, for real. And but I just want to say it was a beautiful weekend here in Atlanta. And it was a good show towards the weekend. And I'm not sure if it's going to be back at the race right next to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is the area that used to be the Georgia Dome, which was blown up to make way for. In fact, they were there together. They were there together at one time. The Georgia Dome was still being used while Mercedes-Benz Stadium was being constructed. So, but then once it was fully, totally constructed and ready to go, the roof work and all that kind of good stuff, they blew up the Georgia Dome. And now it's called Home Depot Backyard. It's like a park. And so that's where it was held. And I think it's a good venue. It has potential to be really good as a Juneteenth Day or any kind of other celebration for us and our people. So that was cool. So I want to give Brother thanks once again. We had a nice float in there. They had fun. So Juneteenth Day, ATL 2019, you know. Also, yesterday was Father's Day. And so as I was leaving Juneteenth Day, a sister, she was pulling up, and she said, excuse me. I was talking to a brother and his lady. He said, excuse me, are you guys fathers? I'm a grandfather. She handed me this card, and I gave the other card to the other brother, and thanked her. She drove off. I didn't even look at it. You know, put it up, and then I took a look at it yesterday, Father's Day. And I was like, wow, that's beautiful. So I'm going to read it. I'm going to keep it for Father's Day. This is Sister Vera Thomas. Sister Vera Thomas wrote this on a Father's Day, June 17th in 2012, 7 years ago, a tribute to fathers. Father, provider, protector, role model for a son, the image of the man who will be the husband of your daughter when that time comes. What is best for your children should be concern number one, regardless of the obstacles a father must overcome. The injustices of our society against the majority of our fathers,
they can make it harder to stand. You got to stand and be a man and a father to your children in every way possibly can. Demonstrate their worth through you by the words you say and the things you do. Don't put your children down or call them out of their name. They will become whatever you claim. Lift them up to higher ground. Let their inner beauty be seen, be found. Tell them how special they are. Be the light that takes them far. Tell them and show them how much you really care. Let them know no matter what, you'll always be there. Happy Father's Day. Pray that our fathers will be guided by the light to lead their children in the ways that are right. Miss Vera Thompson, June 17th in 2012. We thank you, Sister Vera, and we'll keep that for Father's Day. It's beautiful. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, which are Time for an Awakening. And we need to get that done. We need to work on putting these programs so when somebody says, when I say that, you can go there. Or if you do go on to Time for an Awakening Media, timeforanawakening.com, and you see the webpage to the far right, is other programming. You click on that, and the first thing up is African Perspectives. Click on that, and then find the red, black, and green, and then for previous programs that will be dated, that will be dated and titled. So I'm going to make that happen because, Time for an Awakening Media, along with Black Talk Radio Network, are doing beautiful, great things. In fact, Black Talk Radio Network is the number one podcast nationwide. Number one. That's right. Got to give Scotty Reed much love and all of us who are on Black Talk Radio Network, whether we're on Time for an Awakening Media or other programs that he has on Black Talk Radio Network. We all make that contribution, and that's fantastic. This is African Perspectives. Like I said, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays and Wednesdays, right after my program, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Mondays and Wednesdays, it is the Black People Matrix, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix, every Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programs out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Relationships with Joy and Troy. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And I understand that Brother Richard has been on the continent, like I was on the continent of back in April. Brother Richard's on the continent. Can't wait to get back and talk about things he had experienced. But he'll be back, I believe, on this Friday at 8 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. If not Friday, he'll be there Sunday. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Saturday Sports Talk is 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, it ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program, once again, Revive, at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses on WeBuyBlack.com. And like I said, they're having a conference coming up, so I'm going to get a hold of them. Oh, man, I tell you, I'm really looking forward to this one. I heard about it, missed it last time. So WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. And if you're in the Atlanta area, once again, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where they have the laundry detergent, the batteries, the toothbrushes, the deodorant, the lotions, the oils, and all of those good things that you would need, toilet paper. All these things are produced by us. Produced by us. That's right. So check out WeBuyBlack.com. AfricanForTheAfricans.org, Brother Bomani Tahemba, 404-931-9429. He is going to Africa again, if you missed it. I'm quite sure he has the photos from his trip to Ghana. Get a chance to see what's happening at Garvey Town. And by doing so, all you got to do is go on to Facebook. If you want to see photos, facebook.com/Bomani. But if you want to see videos, youtube.com/Bomani2007. And you'll see my good brother, Jerry Johnson. Jerry Johnson, when he's in town, I saw him at the Rites of Passage program that was given to the young brothers and sisters who, man, some really strong young men and some really beautiful young ladies, 7 young ladies and 5 young men. They were outstanding. And these are our warriors. These are our brothers and sisters. You can't run no game on them. They're knowledgeable. They're clear who they are. They're clear about the destiny of African people, and they are sacrificing for African people. It was a beautiful ceremony. So it was good to see Jerry Johnson. Of course, Baba Barudi. Talking with Baba Barudi, he wants to get on a program before the school year starts back, and definitely we're going to make that happen. Definitely want to talk with Baba Barudi. You know, but getting back to Brother Bomani, and he's going to Africa again. He's going to November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then at the end of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. And you can check out those trips. Hopefully that you might want to make that and start saving right now. Because I'm going to give a little something. I'm quite sure you'll be able to go on that trip. Shrine of the Black Madonna opened Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and Sunday from 1 to 3 at the Shrine. It's located in the West End area. And the number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They have everything. The Shrine of Black Madonna has furniture. They have artwork. They have paintings. They have figurines. They have clothing. They have the Nazgaz shoes, the red, black, and green shoes. They have Kwanzaa kids. They got it all, brothers and sisters. They even have an African Holocaust Museum. But they also have a study program, Know Thyself. Brother Olatunji, outstanding job of Know Thyself. Every Saturday, open and free to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. But if you can't make it, but you like that information, you can also contact the Shrine because they have a multimedia library. That's right. It is the most extensive cultural library of its kind. It has over 15,000 videos, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, undoubtedly 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment at your fingertips, at your disposal. Check it out. Check it out. Shrine of Black Madonna. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. That's right, right next. And so if you're at the We Buy Black and then you just walk across the lane there or the aisle there, and there it is, the Medu Bookstore. The number to call and see if they have the book that you want is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, and they're open Monday through Saturday from 10 to 9 and then Sunday from 12 to 6 at the Greenbrier Mall. Check out the Medu Bookstore. Now, the bookstore I promote is, of course, my good brother, Gazimde Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. He is the operator. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. And if he does not have the book that you're looking for, he will get it. And the number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Excuse me. And Ackerman Institute. Please, brother, support Ackerman Institute. Send money to Ackerman Institute. We can check out to Ackerman, A-K-O-B-E-N Institute, P.O. Box 10786, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. 30310, Atlanta, Georgia. But if you want to pay by PayPal or Cash App, put in the information, cash sign, Yah YAAM Baruti, BARUTI. And you can make a donation that way. Another place I'm asking you to consider donating is sanjayahiti.org. Sister Gabrielle Uriel, Sister Gabby. And as I told you, she was a guest on the program last week, Wednesday. Outstanding information, beautiful things that she's doing in the rural area, in the northeast area of Highway 85, quite a ways from Port-au-Prince. And that's in those rural areas, as you know, they don't get a lot of attention. They don't get a lot of so they need help. And so I'm saying to you, contact them, sanjay-haiti.org. sonjay-aiti.org. Check it out. Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics. As we like to say, family-centered economics, Us Lifting Us. They have their radio broadcast every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Number to call on Blog Talk Radio is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. We have done that. We pulled our money together. And we created Cafe Ulu. Cafe Ulu open Tuesday through Friday from 6:30 to 7:30. Is that my time? I got to get these times right. And then Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we have coffee. We're located 2036 Sylvan Road. 2036 Sylvan Road. We have coffee. We have African coffee. We have Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, where coffee started, and all the sorts of coffees. And, of course, everything at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. One of the things that is produced and we sell at Cafe Ulu is, that's right, ambrosia. My good brother, Brother Novak Young, saw him the other day. He looks great. And, of course, his vitality drink. And he has a new drink. We like to be the ones that showcase that new drink. That's right. So, okay. In Yesesim, the book on Revolutionary Daily Thoughts, this past Friday, because I've been gone. And brothers and sisters, I'm saying it today, and I'll say it Wednesday, and of course I'll say it Friday. I'll be gone again. I'll be gone for quite a while. I have to go to Milwaukee. Family, business, and friends that are retiring and so forth. And then I'm going to Denver for another family outing, and then back to Milwaukee, and then back here. I won't be back here again until July. I know. But, you know, I do this. I've been doing it for years. I'm out of town. I'm involved in organizations. We travel. I'm involved in things that happen with family and things that still happen back in Milwaukee, you know. I wish when I was on Blog Talk, I could sometimes, most times, broadcast, you know, remotely. But because of, you know, I can't log all this stuff around, you know. But I like to try to find a way that we can do this. At least, you know, I'm gonna try to find a way. It'll be good, so I can still touch base. Because around this time, I ain't doing nothing. From 10 to 12 Central, I ain't doing nothing, man. So it'd be cool if I could, you know, once again keep in touch with our people. That's always the best. Always the best. The Inye Sesem, the Book of Revolutionary Daily Thought. Yesterday was the 16th, Father's Day. And I really thank my cousins and fellow friends and had a nice good day yesterday. I think that even though it's a European holiday, I like to focus in on Father's Day because, you know, in this society, the most maligned individuals are our brothers. The most misunderstood and hated individuals are brothers. In fact, the greatest, you know, we got to understand this is European hegemony. What's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. And the greatest threat to that, the greatest threat to European men is African men. The greatest threat. That's why Dr. Francis Cress-Wilson said they have a fear of genetic annihilation. Because we have material that can produce genetically that is superior and can wipe them out. And so therefore their mindset is, we must dominate and control at all costs. And brother, they try their damnedest to do that. June 16th. The eye which sees the smoke will look for fire. African proverb. It is because of what has happened to virtually every African warrior of worth in this oppressive anti-African reality that we so easily expect the defenders of our dignity and honorable place in the human landscape of time to not speak truth or finally betray their words once they are challenged by agents of the dominant power. We expect them to either be quiet, imprisoned, stagnantly obscured, or assassinated. And this is why most who know them, who in their heart of hearts are so proud and respecting of them, hoping that they will win, but themselves not courageous enough to believe in the possibility of the liberation, become so surprised and impressed when these heroes and sheroes of African way refuse to stop speaking truth, knowing that they may painfully and immeasurably suffer and die for it. Such emboldened spirits are so unusual in a culture of liars and unprincipled weaknesses that it causes awe and shock in those who witness it, when in reality, it should be the norm. It should be the norm, not the exception. It should be the norm. Affirm an uncompromisingly define the dignity and honor of African people. Affirm I uncompromisingly defend the dignity and honor of African people. June 17th. If there is something I don't understand, I begin to read history backwards. Julius Nyerere. Just because two distinct populations exhibit similar collections of qualities out of the total possibilities of human thought and behavior does not mean that these choices were a function of chance. Particular populations make conscious selections out of the range of human possibilities as to what fits them. These selections fully reflect who they are, have always been, and will always be. We must look beyond just being human for casual factors. For if it's just being human were the reason for such choices, then all people would fundamentally be the same. We also have to consider the fact that some people find themselves acting in opposition to their nature. They end up thinking and acting against what they historically or historically have always been. This anomaly must be analyzed exactly for what it is, the consequences of some form of enforced duress. Having been convinced that the way of our ancestors is backwards and wrong, we are in a situation which is against our will and where we cannot express ourselves as we truly are. Such a cultural contradiction, having been extended over the scores of generations, has led to a state of cultural amnesia where we have come to forget and even violently reject who we are naturally. Who we naturally are. A rejection of self. Affirm, I read our story backwards and forwards. Affirm, I read our story backwards and forward. I understand the importance of the history of us as a people, and I do everything I can to relay that history, to give that history to our people, backwards and forwards. This Friday, I'm going to have a guest on, Brother Emmanuel Kulu, and his book, I, Black Pharaoh, which he hopes will be being made into a movie, focusing on the 18th dynastic period of Queen Hatshepsut, who ruled ancient Kemet 21 years as a pharaoh. She ruled 21 years as a pharaoh, as a king of Kemet. And if you ever go to Kemet, you know, to go down and see her, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see. In fact, I've seen it from the air, because we had a balloon ride, seen it from the air, and I seen it up close and personal, the tomb of Queen Hatshepsut. It is is marvelous. Built right into that mountain, side of that mountain, is an engineering feat among all the other engineering feats that take place in ancient, that were built in ancient Kemet long before Europeans came in. In fact, there's 30 dynasties before the Ptolemies, the Europeans, come in. Our last dynasty was Pianchi and Taharqa of the 25th dynasty. As Dr. John Henry Clark mentions, our last great walk in the sun. You know, so it's a great thing. It really is. Yeah. So, you know, I was looking at some of the things that have affected us tremendously. And of course, what's happening now is a serious exertion of European hegemony with the European Jews. You know, and they are European Jews. Let me pull this article that I saved, because the European Jews who claim, you know, the land of Palestine, you know, they are not Jews at all. You know, they are Ashkenazi. They're Europeans. They're not Hebrews. Now, for me, as a serious African believer in African redemption, African reacclimation, African sovereignty, independence, and all of these things, I exclude the theologies. I'm just into African spirituality. I have an issue with the African, those who don't claim to be African, those who claim to be Black Hebrew Israelites, those who claim to be indigenous to this land and not being African. There's so much damn confusion. The only thing that we should be about is that we are African. And we come together on that. Malcolm, once again, I reference him. He said it best. When I come to the table to discuss the issues that are affecting African people, I'm keeping my religion in my back pocket. I'm keeping the religion back at home, because I don't want to talk about, because I'm a Muslim. And Islam is my religious philosophy. And I know if I talk and start trying to maybe convert some folks to Islam, and I know Christians, that's their main focus, to convert people to Christianity. The Hebrews or the Jews, the European Jews, they don't seek converts. They seek power. They seek nationalism. They seek land. You know, they don't seek converts. But they manipulate and utilize the Christians as well as the Muslims. And I know there's that conflict there, and it always will be there. But believe me, they try their best to do whatever the hell they can do, you know. Surprise. It's not a surprise. Ashkenazi Jews are genetically European. The origin of the Ashkenazi Jews, who came most recently from Europe, has largely been shrouded in mystery. But a new study suggests that at least their material lineage may derive largely from Europe. Though the findings may seem intuitive, it contradicts the notion that European Jews mostly descended from people who left Israel and the Mideast around 2,000 years ago. Instead, a substantial proportion of the population originates from local Europeans who converted to Judaism, said a study by co-author Martin Richards, an archaeologist and geneticist at the University of Huddersfield in England. Little is known about the history of Ashkenazi Jews. And I did a thing, I think we talked about this some time ago. And let me just say the reason why this has to be discussed is because the European Jews control the Europeans. They manipulate the Caucasians tremendously. You know, in fact, because of the theology, it is within the Christian religion that you must, I repeat, you must It's in Christian religion. Support European Jews. Not European Jews. You support Israel. You support the Jews. You back them up. I remember way back in the 80s, because, you know, back in the 80s, Europe had taken Palestine. The European Jews came in and took Palestine through the efforts, you know, of the UN, America, and Britain particularly, you know, and they annexed. And of course, after the European or the Jews Holocaust in Europe, in Germany, the parts of Europe, you know, they came and said, we want, you know, some land. In fact, if you can do the research, they talked about giving Uganda, African land, to these European Jews. But of course, they didn't want that. They wanted the big prize. They wanted the biblical prize. They wanted the stuff that has been mentioned in prophecy. They wanted Palestine and the United States. And I remember hearing something, reading something that when Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, when oil was starting to be found in that part of the world, and discussing it with Harry Truman, who was president at the time, and he was saying that, hey, you know, give them Germany. They're the ones who inflicted on them. You can do it. He said, no, you know, I don't. He said, you know, let me say this. I don't have an Arab constituency. I have a hell of a Jewish constituency. So I got to deal with that. That's what he told Ibn Saud. And, of course, the history is what it is. And once it was established, of course, all of the countries around them start wars broke out. But look at them today. Look at the countries around Israel today. Look at Syria. Look at Iraq. Look at Iran. Look at some of the other countries that, some of those other countries, just like Saudi Arabia, has acquiesced to America and to the Jewish lobby. You know, they're rich. They're not playing around. They're not at war. Kuwait was at one time, only because Kuwait used to be part of Iraq and Iraq wanted it back. And of course, you know, they wasn't having that. You know, so, and then of course there's Oman, the United Arab Emirates, all of that in that Persian Gulf area. And you can see what's happening right now. The United States is wanting. To me, this is a setup. Do you really think that Iran would do something like this, understanding their situation, understanding that they don't have the weaponry and the firepower to challenge the United States and its allies, Israel? It's just like when the Gulf of Tonkin, to get you into the what you call war, the Vietnam War, the Lusitania, all of that. America has Pearl Harbor. They knew that was going to happen. All of these things are set. It's the history on it. Go look for yourself. These things were planned to get into wars so they can dominate, occupy war. Because once again, European culture is war culture. I read the article, as I stated some time ago, at the firehouse table, looking in the newspaper, the firehouse table, talking about, is peace an option? The general said, hell no. We can't afford to have peace. World peace, hell with that. We have to have war. We have to fuel this war machine. America spends over 62% of its budget to war. And you wonder why the infrastructure, you wonder why there's still bad water, you wonder why all these other ailments, you wonder why you can't have the education, you can't have the medical. You can have all of that. When I saw Fathead Christie yesterday on ABC, sometimes, brothers, you know, I think I'm a very cool person. But sometimes I look at these crackers and I'm going to punch them in the face. I sure in hell want to punch Trump in the face. You know? And I'm not a violent person, but, you know, I want to punch him in the face because of how they are and how they behave. It sickens me. You know, it sickens me. So anyway, let me get back to what I was saying. The Ashkenazi Jews, the late converts to Judaism, the ones that now dominate and control Judaism, the one that now controls diamonds, controls the movie industry. And you know, by just saying these things, just saying them, as true that they might be, if you remember when Spike Lee had that character in Mo' Better Blues, made him apologize. Michael Jackson, in the song, he said something, I don't know what the hell he said, made him apologize. Marlon Brando said something about European Jews, made him apologize. The first thing they talk about is anti-Semitism. What is Semitism? Semite, half. These are not Semites. These are European Jews. The Semites are the people in that area, which some people might call Arab, some people might call Iraqi, some people might call Palestinians. Those are Semites. Good morning, Jay. 646.
Hey, Oshi, when I heard you say the C word and you wanted to punch it in the nose, I had to call in, brother, because I couldn't disagree with you or agree with you or whatever any more than what you said. Because instead of punching them, they smack them.
Oh, man.
They smack them.
Yeah. Pimp slap them.
There you go. And I saw what you were talking about. You know, it's the arrogance of that,
yeah,
that dude that kills me, man.
Yeah.
He really kills me. It's like they think they know so much. They think that they got the answer to everything.
Everything. That's right.
You know what I mean? And it's disgusting, man.
Yeah.
It's absolutely disgusting that one has to listen to these jokers make analysis,
yeah,
and give forward opinions knowing that they had no respect for African people.
None.
You know, the sad thing is that we listen to and that we go along with it. That's the crazy thing out of all of it. You know what I mean? He was a terrible governor. He didn't do anything. I mean, for all of his supposed greatness and intellect, he let a fool beat him. I mean, how could you be a political commentator on anything when you let a piece of sugar honey iced tea like Fredo Trump beat you? I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
You should just go and make money and do whatever you gonna do. You shouldn't be able to speak about anything when you allow Fredo to beat you. It's just, but that's what we deal with, Ochi.
Well, did Christie have to give up governorship when he ran for president? No. Yes, I don't know.
No, his term was up.
Oh, his term was up.
He wasn't gonna be reelected anyway.
Right.
People were sick of him,
yeah,
and the things that he was doing. I mean, the man threw people in his administration under the bus.
Yes,
man.
He did.
I mean, the man is just a basic, yeah, gangster dirtbag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's one of the few people that I've seen have bariatric surgery and they'd help his ass.
Did he really? His fat ass had that.
He had the surgery, but it didn't help him. You know what I mean?
His head.
And I'm a big guy, so I'm a big guy too. I'm not no small fry, but it's just, you would think when you make the decision, yeah, to have the surgery, you would at least try to come out like Al Roker.
Yep,
or
exactly.
You know, Jerry Dadler,
yeah,
or somebody like that, the two things that come to mind that You know, I've seen that the surgery and them had the proper weight loss that it was intended to, but him, it ain't even help him. Plus, he think he know it all.
He does. He really does. When
you don't know that. You know,
when you, Jay.
I heard him talk about sports. And the thing is, there's only one more arrogant sports person that I heard that's a Yoruba. And I don't know if you ever heard of Mike Francesa.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, he's a real character.
Yes.
That's Francesa. I mean, I'll give you a quick story. Quick story. Back in the day, James Worthy of the Lakers got busted with two prostitutes.
Right, remember that. Yep.
And him and his host, Mike Dog Russo, Mad Dog Russo.
Right, he's a radio person. Right, he was a radio. Yeah,
let me tell you something, Osi. They lost their minds. They could not believe that James could sleep with two prostitutes in the afternoon and go out there and bust behind in the evening. Oh, man, if you wasn't the hotel for like 3 days, they absolutely lost their mind. I'll never forget it. That's the only thing I remember in regarding sports-wise was just the astonishment and the amazement that them two devils had and the manner in which they talked about Brother James. You know what I mean? They tried to make him into some superhuman Negro. Oh, it was crazy. This was in New York back in the day. You know, and I mean, James Worthy been busting behind ever since he was in high school.
Right.
James Worthy wouldn't have been a greater player if he didn't have that knee injury that he had before he got to college. You know what I mean? It's just like a guy that I grew up with. He was the number one high school basketball player. We grew up together. And matter of fact, his son is now like ranked number 10 or 11 in the country, Jared Springer. But Gary, we grew up together in New York. Mm-hmm. And he was number one. You know what I mean?
Right.
But his knee messed him up, and he never got a chance to make it to the NBA. But I'm hoping that his son, you know, makes it for the NBA for him, because he's had two other sons that done played.
What's his name? His son's name is
Jared Springer, but his name is Gary Springer. Back in, I think it was 81, he was the number one basketball player in the country, you know? Because it's funny, you know, when I grew up, there were some talented people in my building in New York, in the project. Matter of fact, I lived the apartment below Freddie Jackson, the singer.
Okay. Wow, Freddie Jackson.
And you know, he was a monkey man then, and he's a monkey man now.
Man, have you seen him?
Yeah.
Oh, man, he is.
Been a monkey man ever since we were kids.
Well, it's sad. It's sad.
Let me say this to you. His mother and his sister was better singers than he was. His sister could out-sing him on a level that she would have been a star. But you know why she never became a star? Because of her weight.
Oh, okay.
She was before Jennifer Holliday and Jennifer Hudson.
Right.
So it was a weight thing back then. But let me tell you,
she could blow, huh?
Was the dope.
Yeah, she could blow. Well, Freddie Jackson could.
As a kid, on Sundays when they get back home from work, doing their thing for many, many years. So I was never surprised when he became who he became.
Oh yeah, he's
he had been trained.
Right, and he's a great singer. I mean, he's a great balladeer. Some really good love songs he's put out there. You know,
but man,
I saw him recently. I was like, wow.
Oh, he looked terrible.
He looked terrible, man.
I saw him. I saw him in the grocery store like a month ago. He looked as bad as Al Sharpton.
Wow.
And you know Al Sharpton was bad.
Yeah.
With that big,
yeah, he needs to gain some more weight. I ain't saying he needs to be like it was. Of course not, but he needs to gain some weight. His head looks
huge. Hey, listen. I know Al was a big dude, man. So
yeah.
I go back to Al in the jogging suits. That's how long I've known Perm Daddy Al. I mean, yeah. We used to march for Robbie Griffin and all of those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know Al with you know what to call him. Al saw me a couple of months ago and told me I need to get on his diet. I said I don't know. I'm kind of scared, Al, because if I lost all the weight like you, I wouldn't want to look like you, Al, because you look like a bobblehead. He looked at me and started laughing. I see, because I can say that to him, because I've known him for over 30 years.
Yeah.
Nobody can basically say that to him. But yeah, I know Al since he's been a con man for years.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Come on. Oh yeah,
has a
youth preacher, all of that. You know, you follow the escapades and the exploits of Al Sharpton throughout New York, and any big case for that he could get in front of for good photo ops or his battle with Roy Ennis, you know, who was with Court. Roy Ennis crazy.
He's an FBI informant, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They had a guy. I was looking at this thing on YouTube with Michael Fergese, who is like a mob, you know, like a mob boss in a sense. And he was talking about how him and Don King were trying to set people up with the mob. And how I was an informant. Now, you got to remember this, and a lot of people don't want to deal with this. You can tell that there's something not right based on Al's tax issues.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else that I've seen and heard that got tax issues like Al, if I'm not mistaken, have wound up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Al have been charged
mm-hmm.
and had trials in regard to taxes and things of that nature. I mean, the last trial of the great attorney Arthur Maddox, he got Al off of 12 counts.
Mm.
So, you know, Al would probably just be getting out of jail if it wasn't for Arthur Maddox, and he don't even do nothing for Brother Arthur.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Arthur Maddox was the one who saved Al from being in jail for years. So that goes to show you the type of character that Perm Daddy has. Perm Daddy, I'm going to be very honest with you and very clear with you. Perm Daddy is not a principal man. He's not a
Oh, really?
Man.
I'm shocked.
Perm Daddy is Perm Daddy.
That's what
he
is. He's an informant. He's an informant. He's been after himself. So, I mean, hey, it is what it is. I'm going to take a break, Brother Jay, if you're willing to call back or stay on. It's cool.
I'll call back.
All right,
I'll
Jay. Peace to you, dear brother. And when I come back from the other side, I'm going to deal with this European Jew and what we were discussing in terms of European hegemony. And so you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I picked up a little Jazz Crusaders. I want to start at least getting a song or two every month and something different. I know I have an array, so I only play them every now and then. So you might be listening and catch it. And then 2 months from now, you might be listening and you catch it again. And maybe not, but we're going to add to the song list, and a lot of good stuff out there, especially the old stuff. You know how I am. I love the old stuff, you know. So this is the Jazz Crusaders. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up
at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again.
Sorry about that.
Oh. I thought I had that on a stop. My bad, family. Welcome back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And right after my program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. with Brother Franklin Jones every Monday and Wednesday. On Monday night from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds. And following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Also from 8 to 10 on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. And then Time for an Awakening on Friday at 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then, of course, Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. He had a good program last night. I listened, and here my good brother, Brother Ralph, always. I know Brother Ralph is listening. You know, he don't always call in, but he's always listening. I appreciate him. Well, you know, I love me some Ralph Goldsmith because he Goldberg, because he's a good brother. Ralph is a good brother. And in fact, if it wasn't for Ralph, I wouldn't even be on this forum because he listened to me on Blog Talk, then developed a good relationship and turned me on to Brother Elliot. And of course, as the saying goes, the rest is history. So appreciate that. And appreciate all the brothers and sisters that listen, that do call in, that don't call in. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. If nobody listens to this program, I'll be doing this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's my contribution to helping to correct the minds of our people, because it is the mind. It is the mind. Everything else, it is about the mind. So that is my objective. That is the plan of this program, to work on our people's mind. Like I said, on this program, we only discuss independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, because it is the only discussion we should be having. And I sure in the hell don't want to get into no damn debate with some Negroes talking about, well, this and that about independence and white men. No. I don't want to. That's ludicrous to argue or even discuss whether or not we should be that. Well, of course, we must be that for our very survival. The discussion should be, how do we achieve it? What mechanisms can we do, put in place to make that happen? That's the only thing. But I know our people are scared. Our people are afraid. Fear. False evidence appearing real. Because it is. That's the fear that they put into us, that makes us not want to move, become catatonic, that makes us very fearful of what they're going to say, what they're going to do. And I understand what they're going to do, because they're evil people. It's evil. I was going to read an article about all the psychological and chemicals and all kinds of warfare that they engage in to neutralize and to exterminate people. These are evil people. Period. Getting back to the European Jews, little is known about the history of the Ashkenazi Jews before they were expelled from the Mediterranean and settled in what is now Poland around the 12th century. On average, all Ashkenazi Jews are genetically as closely related to each other as the fourth or fifth cousins, said Dr. Harry Oster, a pathology, pediatrics, and genetics professor at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York and author of Legacy, A Genetic History of the Jewish People. He wrote that for Oxford Press back in 2012. But depending on whether the lineage gets traced through material or paternal DNA or through the rest of the genome, researchers got very different answers for whether Ashkenazis originally from Europe or the Near East. Past research found that 50% to 80% of the DNA from the Ashkenazi's Y chromosome, which is used to trace the male lineage, originated in the Near East. That supported a story wherein Jews came from Israel and largely eschewed intermarriage when they settled in Europe. The Holy Land, seven amazing archaeological finds. That's where that comes from. That's the BS on that. But historical documents tell a slightly different tale based on accounts such as those of Jewish historians Flavio Josephus. By the time of the destruction of the Second Temple in 70 AD, as many as 6 million, 6 million again, huh? Says that 6 million. 6 million Jews were living in the Roman Empire, but outside Israel, many, mainly in Italy and in Southern Europe. In contrast, only about 500,000 lived in Judea, said Oster, who was not involved in the new study. And if the letter J, there's so many problematic things, as far as I'm concerned, so many contradictory things, so many odd things. If the letter J in itself from the alphabet was not created until the 16th century, then how could it be Judea? How could it be Jews? How could it be Jesus? There's no letter J. Anyway, okay. But historical documents tell a slightly different tale based on accounts such as Flavius Josephus. By the time of the destruction of the Second Temple, as many as 6 million Jews were living in Roman Empire, but outside Israel, mainly in Italy and Southern Europe. In contrast, only about 500,000 lived in Judea, said Oster, who was not involved in the new study. The major Jewish communities were outside Judea, Oster told Live Science. Richard and his colleagues analyzed mitochondrial DNA, which is contained in the cryptoplasm of the egg and passed down from the mother. From more than 3,500 people throughout the Near East, the Caucasians and Europeans, including Ashkenazi Jews. The team found that four founders were responsible for 40% of the Ashkenazi mitochondrial DNA, and that all of these founders originated in Europe. The majority of the remaining people could be traced to other European lineages. All told, more than 80% of the matrilineal lineages of European Jews can be traced to Europe, with only a few lineages originating in the so-called Near East. Virtually none came from North Caucasus, located along the border between Europe and Asia, between the Black and the Caspian Seas. This is where you get the dividing line that makes Europe a continent. Yeah. So they use the Caspian and Black Seas and that range of the Caucasus Mountains. So west of there is the European continent. The findings should thoroughly debunk one of the most questionable but still tenuous hypotheses that most Ashkenazi Jews can trace their roots to the mysterious Khazar kingdom that flourished during the 9th century in the region between Byzantine Empire and the Persian Empire, Richard and Oster said. The genetics suggests many of the founding Ashkenazi women were actually converts from local European populations. The simplest explanation was that it was mainly women who converted and they married with men who came from. That's their explanation. That's the simplest thing. You know, because if you, many women who are Jewish, who are European Jews, can marry outside the faith, so to speak. But it's the men. So if a European Jewish man married a woman, she would be Jewish. But if a Black man or someone else outside of their Jewish European Jewish faith married, then it would not be. She would just be whatever his nationality, whatever his beliefs are. He could even be Christian. He could be Muslim. You see? The simplest explanation was that simply women who converted and then they married with men who came from the... Another possibility is that Jews actively converted both men and women among local populations at this time, although researchers would need more detailed study of paternal lineages to test the hypothesis. And unfortunately, that is it on that subject. I thought it was a longer article, but it's enough. It's enough to tell me what I want to know in terms of who these people are and what they've done. You know, and the fact that they are some of the most vicious people along with the other Europeans on the planet today. In fact, I would maintain that the European Jews who are in control of Europeans, Christians particularly, and their hegemony, their willingness to dominate and control the world, their willingness to develop ways so they can go in and create war and bomb countries. Their willingness to maintain and sustain the privilege that has been created by them, for them, at the expense of all others. The control of areas of industry, entertainment, other factors. So you got to understand that what we're talking about here is no lightweight. This is serious. But we're afraid because we've been trained to be afraid to discuss the hardcore issues that affect African people globally, that affect the continent. And there was always that perception that because European Jews were Semites, that they were not pure Europeans, and that the Christian right particularly had issue with them. And that's, of course, is their ignorance. And then once again, a pathological denial of reality and history. They're the Christ killers and all this whole kind of BS. You know, in fact, once again, they rely on a history that is, they rely on a history that is fabricated. They rely on a history that is myth. In fact, what problems that we have, our problems is basically this, period, point blank. We dispute facts that we don't understand with myths we've been forced to believe. We dispute facts that we don't understand with myths we were forced to believe. This mindset keeps us in the mental captivity that we are in. We rather believe the myths than to deal with the truth. We can't handle the truth. We can't handle it. We've been trained every Sunday. Tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars go into Caucasian banks on Monday that are collected in churches across this country. Some of these edifices are beautiful edifices in communities that are in ruin. And it is the imposition of this theology that is connected to the, in fact, what are we talking about? We're talking about Abraham, who's connected to all three religions. Abraham, the Himyaritic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And it is Judaism that manipulates it all. The European Jews. And these Ashkenazi Jews have been planning this for some time. At the turn of the last century, Theodor Herzl and the Balfour Declaration to, you know, to take the land from the Palestinians. And of course, what the Germans were doing to European Jews, wherever, Poland, France, of course, Germany, gaining the wide sympathy. And then, of course, here in this country, I remember they mentioned, I don't remember the European Jew's name, but it was in Atlanta. It was here in Atlanta. He owned a drugstore. And I can't remember the details too good. I don't know if it was sexual assault or something. Well, they hung him. And the European Jews talked about that and used that. But the suffering of African people, the hanging, the lynchings, the murdering, the terror, all of this that has been ongoing since we've been here. And then this idea that we were somehow together in the civil rights movement. They had the money to help support it, just like, you know, Soros and cats today, you know. And of course, if the European Jews wanted to go golf at a golf course and they were denied because they were European Jews, then they would come together, pull their money together, and buy it out or create their own, which is, of course, understandable. I like that idea. That's what we should do. But we can't do that because we're trained in this society to be fragmented, to be divided, to think of yourself individualistically. Don't think of yourself as a collective. Don't think of yourself as brother and sister. Think of yourself as an individual of getting yours. And if you think of yourself as an individual, America will provide the way. Because that idea is there. But the European Jew don't think of himself as individual. Oh, no. It's serious collective. It is a serious collective. They don't spend money outside their community. They ain't going to no brother or sister for whatever help or assistance they need. They ain't doing it. I don't know about your community, but I'm almost sure there is a Jewish enclave within your city. Some have different areas, multiple areas. Some have a area, but they're collective. Some are Orthodox. Some of you might see the Hasidic Jews with the little curl, the hat, the big bushy hat they wear. Some might see other European Jews who just, you know, they look like, because they're European. They look at any of the crack, excuse me, they look at any of the Caucasian that you see on the streets. You have no idea. You have no idea that they're Jewish. Because that's not an issue. There's no issue in this country about being Jewish. In fact, it has come to a point that people have, because of how they perpetuated it, people believe that being Jewish is a nationality or a race or something like that. I'm Jewish. I'm Catholic. I ain't Catholic, but you see the point. I'm Baptist. You don't say that, but you constantly call out this theological designation of that person. And that's all it is. A theology, a train of thought. These are Europeans who have developed a theology that they claim is historical. That the people, the foundation of it, that's the problem of Christianity, because it comes after Judaism and they say it's historical. None of that BS is historical. And that's why I talk about it periodically. And that's why I rail against it periodically, because it is not historical. Well, Brother Oshie, ancient Egyptian stuff ain't historical. I know. And they never claimed it was. That's the beauty of ancient Kemetic theology. It's metaphor. It's, man, I had the word on the tip of my tongue. But it's not historical. They don't claim even the man god, Aser and Aset and Heru. Now, somebody wanted to argue that they were real people. They never said, the ancient Kemetic people said they were never real people. They were not claiming to be real people. Who the Greeks called Osiris, Isis, and Heru, or Horus. They never claimed to be. But they were the model for human beings to live by and give direction. But the Europeans have claimed that their religion, taken from that lasted thousands of years ago, that it is that what happened thousands of years ago is myth and fairy tale and myth and allegory. What they have is historical. Really? And everything that you talk about is almost like word for word? Image for image? Are you kidding me? That is historical? But shit, but the information that precedes it, literally by thousands of years, and you copied, that's not historical, but yours is now? And then you have all these other myths created and in context within it of the Noah story. And of course, the Noah story has deleterious effects on us as African people because those who are in the religions believe we are cursed. Did you ever read the Jewish Talmud? Brothers and sisters, Dr. John Henry Clark was most correct. We have no friends. We have none. We have no friends on this planet, particularly because of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, which is a global phenomenon. So everywhere around the planet that dark people preside, they are vilified, they are demeaned, they are degraded, some are killed. Just read a little piece the other day about the brothers and sisters in India. They want to be in India. India has some good schools. India, the Indians, they, you know, put a premium on education. They've come here. They win all of the spelling bee contests, don't they? They be dusted in the spelling bee contests, man. The Indians, you know. And, of course, there are many of them doctors. In fact, when I remember when Milwaukee came into this medical program, comp care, which is something like socialized medicine to a degree, you know, you had to go to this one particular hospital and da-da-da-da. Almost all of the doctors were Indian. All of them, almost all the doctors. My first two doctors were Indian, you know. And, you know, there's always been that because they've had, in fact, I love the title of this piece that Imam Worf D. Muhammad, when he took over the Nation of Islam and wanted to direct it to Orthodox Islam or particularly Sunni Islam. And he had this book, when he first came out, it was a green book, I never forget it. And there was a chapter in the book called The Roots of Aryan White Racism and Diabolical Consciousness. It's a hell of a title. The Roots of Aryan White Racism. And what he was talking about was coming through the Caucasus Mountains, the Aryans coming down into India and defeating the Dravidians, the dark-skinned people of India, and then developing the caste system and developing all the other craziness that the these people created for themselves in India, which is, of course, still there today. And now you have the untouchables. You have dark-skinned people who hate themselves because why? They're on the fringe or they're on the margins of the society. In fact, there were so many things that were said by untouchables, they can't even, you ain't supposed to even be cast a shadow on somebody who's Indian, you You know, you got to go far away. You can't even do that. You gotta take a broom and sweep your tracks away as if you were never there. And all stupidness. But that's it. That's the Indians and the Chinese and all the Asians and everybody else has African people encounter, and particularly African people, because we're leaving Africa thinking that someplace else because it's so bad for them in Africa. We need to make Africa good for Africans because it is ours. We need Africa to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. We need to, damn it, go home. I've been wearing this hat. I went and got that hat I was telling you I was going to get. Make Africa home again. And when people see it, they look at the make and they see the again. And of course, you know, they make a reference to make America great again, you know. Oh, hell no, because number one, America ain't never been great, never has been great, never will be great. You can't be great stealing, robbing, killing. That ain't great. You know, you can't be that. Oh, thank you, Ralph. Love you, brother. Appreciate you. I hope you had a great day yesterday, Ralph. Happy Father's Day to you. No, you know, you can't be great when you have that kind of mindset, that evil mindset. Hell no, you can't be great. To me, being great is being caring, loving, concerning, you know, willing to share, willing to help. That's being great. No, you can't be great. And what you want to do is murder, steal, take, create, and rob. No, America has never been great and never will be great. So I wore my hat this weekend. I was down at Juneteenth Day. I had my NASGAS shoes on, the red, black, and green. Actually, I had the white ones on, you know, because I had a little outfit on, you know what I'm saying? I had a little ensemble. And I had my hat. They say, oh, I like them shoes. Hey, how about this hat? Oh, man, that's what that hat say, man. That's cool. I like that. Make Africa home again. You see, I think most of our people really love that. We just haven't been confronted with that. And the leadership doesn't put that out there. The leadership that we have is in a begging damn mode, consistently begging the Caucasians to once again do what you say you got on paper. Be right, do right. You know? Don't be so mean to us. Stop incarcerating us at mass, in mass. Stop miseducating us. Stop putting us in this dilapidated neighborhoods and housing. Stop restricting us. Stop redlining us. Stop segregating us. It's what they do. It's who they are. We're trying to change them. Hell with changing them. Once again, I can't say it to the point of nauseam. All this redundancy. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. There's nothing that we can do or say that'll change the way they feel about us. There is nothing. They got cognitive dissonance, Caucasian fragility, and European hegemony. With those three things, they dominate and control. And we don't understand it. We don't have a damn clue. We keep begging, hoping, wishing, and praying, not understanding that there's nothing we can do to change the mindsets of these folks. Consistently using moral persuasion. Consistently using the politicians, the religious leaders, the Catholics. I mean the religious leaders, the pastors and the clergy. Having things that are more about symbol than substance. The image of it, the symbol of it, as opposed to reality of it. I know it is difficult. It is difficult for us to understand. It's difficult for us to comprehend, you know? And so because we don't understand it, and when we believe in things we don't understand, that's right, brothers and sisters, we suffer. We suffer. And we have been a suffering people. We have been a suffering people. I wish we could just really take a step back and really look at our situation, you know, and talk about it, analyze it. Nobody dealing with this but us. Ain't no Caucasians, you know, ain't no Europeans, ain't nobody but us dealing with this, because it is for us to deal with. It is not for them. It is for us. And what we're doing is finding ways that we as African people can purge ourselves of the ignorance that has been imposed upon us by Europeans to now think independently, think rationally. That's what we need. That's what we need, brothers and sisters. We need to do that. But it's going to be very difficult for us to do that because the European has a vice grip on our minds, a vice grip. And if you understand that tool, the vice grip, if you understand it, once the vice grip is set, you can't pull it apart. Once the European has set it, you can't pull it apart. He's got you. He's got you. The only way that you can release that vice grip that he has on our minds, there's a knob at the end of the handle. This program is designed to turn that knob. Other programs of knowledge of self are designed to turn that knob. And the more information you get about yourself and to begin to respect and love yourself and each other, your woman, your man, your children, your elders, your ancestors, you turn the knob. You continue to infuse yourself, you will continue to turn the knob till finally the tension can be released. You can open the vice grip and take it off of your minds. And not that you challenge Caucasians. You don't challenge them. You don't debate with them. You don't conversate with them. You do nothing. You come together and you begin to plan and build for yourself. You get other African people in the diaspora. You get African people on the continent to wake up, to purge ourselves of the ignorance that is in our minds and infuse it with a knowledge of self on the continent, in the diaspora. Brothers and sisters who have the ability, who have the wherewithal to do a number of things as managers, as engineers, as workers, to build for ourselves. Now, I ain't gonna lie to you. I appreciated the road that the Japanese built. Excuse me, the road that the Chinese built when I went to Tamale in Ghana back in April, from Tamale to Moli Park. But I also seen a resort that they built for themselves, with another road leading to that. And maybe one day when I go back, I'll check it out. But I'm saying, we could do that. Anything that Africa needs, we can do. But because how these Europeans have manipulated us, fragmented us, and thinking that what's most important is Ghana. What's most important is Nigeria, Cameroon. No, what's most important is Africa. One Africa. Our dedicated and committed scholars understood that. Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, Idi Amin Dada, all of them understood that. And of course, the Caucasian understood it as well. And he said, I can't have it. I can't continue to get what I want free. No. I got to undermine this. I got to sow the seeds of discourse constantly and consistently. This is messing with my hegemony, because what's mine is mine, and you ain't getting none of mine. But more deeply, what's yours is mine, and I ain't giving you none of that either. because I'm controlling it all. And I know it's difficult for us here in America because we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of their superiority and our inferiority. Just be real. I never say they're superior. I like when I ain't heard from Brother Paul in quite a while. I hope he's okay. I'm gonna drop him an email. Ain't heard from him in a while. But he said he didn't want to call him superior. Another sister I know, she was adamant about not calling. I don't want to call him, you know. But he said they're extreme, and they are. So I like that one. European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. And the only reason why I use racism, because they're the ones who created it. There's no such thing as race. There's no such thing as race. But they created the concept of race, giving themselves the top position with everybody else a lower position. They're the ones that did that. Johann Blumenbach and Carol Linnaeus in the 16th century. They're the ones that did that. You can look it up. Caucasoid, Negroid, and Mongoloid. With them at the highest position. With everybody else at the lowest position. With us at the lowest position on the human evolutionary scale. And you believe that? Of course you can. Because you have been believing it. Because you've been indoctrinated to believe it. That they are the highest in evolution. Are you kidding? A bunch of thieves, murderers, pledgers. Are you kidding? I remember when I was younger talking with a brother who had just went to Marquette University in Milwaukee. Had a course and dealt with the Greeks. Man, he was like, you know, see, that's what happens. And the brother is a revolutionary brother today. But I will never forget that conversation. Probably back in the late 60s, early 70s, talking about how great Greece was, how all the things that Greece did, the father of this, the father of that, you know? Come to find out they ain't did a damn thing but lie and steal. Even when Socrates came back to Greece after studying in ancient Kemet, studying in the what they called the mystery schools in ancient Kemet, comes back to Greece. They made him drink poison. How dare you come back with all these ideas that are foreign to us, that are not indigenous to us? Well, of course, they changed that because they took ancient Kemet and they went into the libraries and went into some of the temples. To the victor goes the spoils, so they can change the imagery. Yeah. Let me get this caller in, my good brother. 646-646.
Hey, did you get a chance to watch that Clarence event?
You know what? I sure did not. I thought about you, and I was going to say that to you earlier when you're on. I did not because I couldn't get on my Netflix for some reason, so I think I need to, because I changed. I made a change, so I need to put in that code, which I didn't, so I'm going to do that. So okay, I'm gonna definitely do that because I want to see it myself. I want to see how this man, who was the claimed that to be as the godfather, as a wheeler and dealer, you know, what was in it for him, Jay?
I couldn't even really tell you, man, because, you know, I guess being able to be amongst the Negro muckety-mucksters and have those muckety-mucksters call him.
Right, had that access.
And maybe get a little piece of each deal, you know what I mean? Because it seems to me,
right,
that, you know, I don't know, because to be honest with you, to be called the godfather of Black America and for Black America that don't have sugar, honey, iced tea to show for it in that industry, and in politics, hey, it is what it is. It's just like Ron Brown. You remember Ron Brown?
Oh yeah, I know Ron Brown. Party. Yeah, he was murdered. So, he was murdered by the Clinton clan.
Yeah, you know. Matter of fact, I see his son at least once a week on the Roland Martin show. So, I mean, you know, and where are we at today? Where we, you know, everybody talks about being part of this system. But I always ask the question, what do you have as a people to show for it? You are doing nothing but putting forward the agenda of your oppressor. And what are you getting for it? You can't tell me what you're getting for it. You can't tell me the position of the collective black people being better. I mean, it's all BS, bro. That's all it is. It's just BS. It's making black folks feel as though they have some sort of position in their oppression, and in reality, all they have is just being further impressed. You know what I mean? You're not keeping the oppressor from oppressing you.
You're not
building institutions.
You're not
doing anything for the oppressor. It's like a Negro who goes to war to die for this country. You're a fool. How could you? In all honesty, feel good about a situation to where you go die for this country and then you come back and you get hung in your uniform.
You know, Jay. You know, Jay, you know what profession I was in, right?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. And I thank God for that, because the kind of man that I am, that was cool. And I enjoyed being a firefighter. You know, because it's not political. I knew I couldn't be a police officer because I couldn't support and I couldn't enforce unjust laws. I couldn't come down on my community. I know some good brothers and sisters and some conscious brothers and sisters who are police officers in the Black Police Officer Organization and so forth. But still, yet and still, your purpose and your job is to maintain order within various community. Exactly.
The thing, I've never had an issue, to be honest with you, with firemen. I always felt they had the hell of this fight of them all, because I know in New York City, the white man ain't one of them around them.
Hold that thought right there, Jay, because you are most correct. And what bore that out more than anything, and I knew it, we as a Black Firefighter Organization, I've been involved in the Black Firefighter Organization since the late 70s. We knew all along the most racist department, as well as the occupation itself, because the occupation itself is that, but the most racist, oh, glaring racist department was New York City. New York City had 11,000 firefighters. They only had 300 of us. And then when 9/11 happened, and then when that inside job of 9/11 happened, they made a documentary called All Our Sons, because of the 343 firefighters that lost their lives on that day. And now, Jay, the many others who are dying of cancer because of it, only 12 at that time were us. 12. Out of 343.
I think the black firefighters had the good enough sense not to run their behinds down there to try to save them. I really feel that way. I think enough firefighters that were black understood. Now, I don't know what they did afterwards, but I didn't hear of too many rushing down there, because, listen, if I was off duty, I wouldn't have rushed down there, because you know something, to be honest with you, and this is how the government really works, and this is as truthful as it comes. Thousands of people that were down there have gotten cancer that the public don't even know about.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, they'll never tell the truth. They'll never tell the truth about it. And they'll only deal with it when they're embarrassed, like John Stewart just did to him last week.
Mm-hmm.
But there's thousands of people who have gotten cancer because they were down there when the towers went down. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because of all of, I guess, the debris and the burnage and just all of the materials and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I could honestly to this day tell you where I was at when the towers went down.
Of course. That's one of those incidents. That's just like when I was a kid. Yeah. I could tell you exactly where I was at when I heard about Kennedy getting assassinated.
Yeah, I don't remember too much of nothing else where I was over the years, but I know exactly where I was when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know something, O.C., the black firefighters in New York City are constantly fighting with them Yorubas.
Of course they are. Of course
they
are.
I know a cat, a firefighter, a conscious brother, that done had the whip behind because of the trifling stuff that they have done or tried to do to him. I know a brother that went into a firehouse, and then the second day, there was a noose placed on his locker. Let me tell you what he did. The devil that made the sly remark, he caught him in the locker room and put it on him.
That sounds like Chicago.
And you know after that, there was no witnesses or
yeah,
no nothing.
Right.
And he absolutely gave it. He gave it to him.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, he broke a couple of limbs on him.
Oh wow!
And
okay.
Yeah, man.
Broken ribs, teeth, ankles.
And never heard about it.
Well, no. Let me
and
say this. Jay,
let me finish this. Right
okay.
Quick, OC. And the thing was, after that, you know what he did? He never had no problems again because you know what shift he would work? He would work the 24-hour shift and have 3 days off.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's all he did.
Yeah.
He
well,
wouldn't work nothing else but 24 hours and 3 days off till the time that he got his pension and he left that joint.
Yeah. Well, he probably had some other things that he could do outside of that. He probably had some other things he could do outside of that because a lot of firefighters do that. But the deal is this. The fire department, the fire service in this country as it was formulated, particularly coming into the 40s and 50s, was very, very racist. The fire service is the most racist occupation. In fact, at our Black Firefighters National Convention in Los Angeles in 2006, I believe it was, we had the Justice Department come in. And the Justice Department
right.
still said that the fire department is still one of the most racist occupations that there is because even though it's a public works job, and being a public works job, the people's taxes of those cities or towns or municipalities pay for that service. And so if you have a city that is 70% us, but you have a fire department that is 80% Caucasian male, you know there is something fundamentally wrong with that. That's
hey,
like
Archie, can
that's
I ask
like tax
you a quick question?
Sure.
Can you tell me the one fire department in this country that has the most black employees?
The fire department has the most?
Yeah, black employees.
I probably have to say Chicago, because Chicago had an influx about 20 years ago. And Philadelphia used to have the most back in the early 80s. Philadelphia.
And what percentage is that?
Oh, I'm not sure what the percentage was at the time. I was just looking at
the... No, but I'm saying in Chicago, if you're saying right now Chicago has the most black
firefighters,
members.
Yeah.
Could you give me an idea on what percentage that would be?
Probably about 15-20%.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
Because understand something, Jay, as I was trying to say, the fire department in America, because of its unique working arrangements, you live at the fire department. Nepotism is huge in the fire service. It is huge even to this day. There are now today still 2, 3, 4, 5 generations of the same people working in the fire department. Almost if they can say to bequeath a position to a relative or reserve a position to a relative.
Right.
It is just that deep. The fire service today, it is a noble profession. There's no doubt about it because you risk your life trying to help and save others, to protect the property and lives of others. I enjoyed being a firefighter, but more importantly, I enjoyed the organizations I was involved in and meeting brothers and sisters from not just around this country, but literally around the world.
No, I got you. I agree with you.
But I also understand the occupation that it is. So when that documentary was made, All Our Sons, narrated by Alfre Woodard, appearing on public television, PBS, one of the main things it pointed out was how racist the New York City Fire Department was. The Vulcan Society of New York, Brother Paul Washington, who was the president at the time, they went ahead and they sued them because they were ripe to be sued. And today, there are some positions, but still, it's still a huge department, and we're still not represented to where we should be. But women have come on the job. Latinos have come on the job, some Asians and so forth, you know. But there's still a lot of resistance. There's a lot of resistance. So, all right, Jay.
All right, have a good one, brother. Look forward to Wednesday.
All right, Hotep. Jay. Hotep, peace to you, my friend. Yeah, we're going to get ready to close out, to make way for my good brother, Black People Matrix, you know. But, yeah. That's still all a part of that European hegemony. This is mine. And I dictate. You know? See, if the fire service was a private institution, hey, you do what you want, but it's public. It's public. And believe me, not, you know, anybody can do it, but not everybody wants to do it. That's the thing about the fire service. It really is. Once you go through the training, you gain the confidence of your equipment and knowing what you're supposed to do, you can be a firefighter. You can work with others to help mitigate emergencies, whatever they might be. And, of course, the fire department is called for everything, for everything. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you being here today. I look forward to my guest on Friday. I'll be contacting him. So please stay some time on Friday to listen to this young man who's developed this eye. Black Pharaoh, Brother Emmanuel Kulu Jr. So we look forward to that all. And then be here Wednesday with me. I appreciate it. Like I said, this is what I hope to do, to help put something on our minds, get us to think. Do we end this program like Lynn? We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is their minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants that they came to do out and don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Sante Sanamis, thank you. Abibu Fahodio. Abibu Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Peace, family. See you on Wednesday. Have a blessed and wonderful day.